You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, October 31st, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, if not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building.
We got it.
Today on the program, just me and lots of news. Occupy Wall Street across the nation. Violent confrontations, arrests, apparently police in some cities, sending their own occupiers to occupations. Speaking of occupied, no pun intended, or I guess pun intended, or maybe not even, the Palestinians, Palestinian Authority, Palestine has been admitted to the United Nations Cultural Committee. Talk about the implications. Herman Cain apparently can't keep his hands to himself. I'm sorry. We will discuss that and more. Super Committee looking to cut Social Security, of course. What is this on my computer? What was that noise? It wasn't coming from me.
That was coming from you.
No. Oh, okay. I know what it was. Sorry about that. We'll take any conservative calls today. 646-257-3920, of course. But, of course, it is Halloween. And I don't know if it's a tradition, but let me do this.
A lucky day.
Oh! Hi, kids. Welcome to the show. Oh, boy. I'm in a good mood this morning. I just had a big breakfast and I got lots of energy. Today we have a special surprise. Instead of reading a terrifying tale, which I normally do, today the Count's going to draw you a scary story. What a switch. What a...
All right. There you go, folks. Matt's looking at me like, what's that? You never heard of Second City TV?
No, I have heard of it. I just never seen that one before.
You've never seen any of it, have you?
No, I used to be on TV like really late at night.
There you
when
go.
When I was in high school.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Like at like 2 in the morning.
Yes, in repeats.
Yes,
extended
repeats.
Folks, just a reminder, you can support this program by becoming a member at majority.fm. It is your membership that keeps this show alive. And will keep this show alive to the extent that the show will be kept alive. So please become a member today at majority.fm. If you haven't claimed your swag, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We've got wide selection of DVDs that you may enjoy. You can find out more at the website at majority.fm. So Politico today reporting that... During Herman Cain's tenure as the head of the National Restaurant Association, what? Herman Cain was a lobbyist?
Surprise, surprise.
You know, I have a theory about this. Obviously, this stuff was put out by one of the rivals to Herman Cain. I don't think it was Mitt Romney, because Herman Cain is Mitt Romney's blessing. He's basically been able to fend off all these other... right-wing conservatives, on a national level. But Herman Cain has no organizational structure to run for president. He has no ground game in Iowa. He has no ground game in New Hampshire. I don't know if anybody from his campaigns ever visited South Carolina. And you simply don't win elections that way. He has absolutely no operation. So my guess is this is put out either by Rick Perry's campaign or by a rival campaign who hopes that they can be the vice presidential nominee. Now, the funny thing about it is that, well, let me continue and explain. At least two female employees complained to colleagues and senior association officials about inappropriate behavior by Cain, ultimately leaving their jobs at the trade group, multiple sources confirmed to Politico. So it turns out, and the Cain campaign, incidentally, has not issued a denial of the charges that he settled sexual harassment claims against him at this time. From what I've been reading, this Politico story is well-sourced. Cain was the president and CEO of the National Restaurant Association from 96 to 99. And the question is, do Republican voters care that a guy has been sexually harassing women at the workplace? I don't think so. In fact, if anything, I think you're going to see an uptick in Republican primary voters in support of Herman Cain. And to be honest with you, I'm not even convinced that the Republican campaign that leaked this information, this Oppo research, they call it, was actually terribly, was hinging any of their hopes on the fact that Herman Cain has a problem where he likes to take liberties with his female coworkers or people who are working for him, I should say. I think this is just a way to remind the American public that Herman Cain was a lobbyist more recently than he's been the head of any pizza sales. It was one of the top 25 lobby operations that, and there's thousands, that were lobbying the U.S. government. In fact, he ramped it up quite a bit. The year before he took the helm, the association represented 150,000 food service establishments, had roughly 115 employees, and a government affairs budget of nearly $20 million. He expanded upon that. So you've got, tens of millions of dollars this guy is using just to lobby the U.S. government. I have a feeling we're going to hear a lot more about that in the next Republican debate than we will about Herman Cain's propensity to take advantage of his position as boss to sexually harass women. And meanwhile, another story that comes out about Herman Cain that, financial corruption in the Republican Party and these conservative movements, hardly a big story, apparently. But as reported on Sunday. No, this came out yesterday. In the Journal Sentinel in Wisconsin, Herman Cain's two top campaign aides ran a private – this is one of them is a smoker, right? What's his name?
Mark Block.
We got to get that song. Where's that Herman Cain song? Not just the Herman Cain, but the one that was in the ad.
Oh, yeah, we need to get that one.
We got to get that one. We'll just play the other Herman Cain song.
I don't have it on me.
What do you mean you don't have it on you?
I take it off. It's an old sound clip.
Oh, you got to keep songs like that on the file, buddy. You got to get that power board or whatever it is. Two top campaign aides ran a private Wisconsin-based corporation that helped the GOP presidential candidate essentially launch his campaign by footing the bill for tens of thousands of dollars as in expenses, something that might be a breach of federal tax and campaign law.
Surprise, surprise.
Is anybody surprised by that? Now, that corporation was Prosperity USA, fully backed by the Koch brothers.
Surprise, surprise.
Prosperity USA said it was owed about $40,000 from the Cain campaign for a variety of items in February and March. Prosperity USA was owned and run by Wisconsin political operatives Mark Block and Linda Hansen. It is not known if Cain's election fund eventually paid back Prosperity USA, which now appears to be defunct.
Hey, what happened?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. A front group for Koch money, the Koch brothers money, was set up to funnel it into Herman Cain's campaign. And once it had done that, it went bye-bye. Prosperity USA also paid as much as $100,000 to the Congress of Racial Equality, a conservative black organization, shortly before Cain was a featured speaker at the group's annual Martin Luther King Jr. dinner in mid-February. Wow! What an amazing, amazing coincidence.
Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
$100,000, that's a pretty decent speaker's fee to be paid to the organization you want to speak at. Usually speakers get paid. In this instance, the speaker paid $100,000 to be there. That never happens. Although I guess I do remember, was it David Koch paying $500,000 to the Libertarian Party to become his vice presidential candidate back in the day? Eh, whatever. Election law experts say the transactions raise a host of questions for the private organization, which billed itself as a tax-exempt nonprofit. If the records accurately reflect what occurred, this is way out of bounds, said a Washington-based election lawyer who advises many Republican candidates and conservative groups on campaign issues. Huh, what a coincidence. They just had this guy on the Rolodex. The lawyer asked not to be identified because of those affiliations. In other words, I'm with the campaign that leaked this, and I was probably the one who actually saw that it was illegal, and so I leaked it. Michael Maestelman, a Wisconsin campaign attorney, agreed. The number of questionable and possible illegal transactions conducted on behalf of Herman Cain is staggering. I'm going to even get that out. Wow, wow, wow. All right, so Herman Cain having real problems. Of course, what happened is his campaign will pay off the fine. That'll be funded by the Koch brothers, too. In the next Republican debate, you'll hear a lot about Cain's tenure as the head of a lobbyist group without much mention of his sexual harassment of women. And that's just the way the Republican presidential campaign will go. Meanwhile, David Frum, very worried, former, you know, he's the guy who came up with the Axis of Evil speech, or I guess line in that speech. He has since, like many Republicans, tried to distance himself from everything he did and from what the Republican Party became or actually had become. But now that he's... Now that it's come to full fruition, he doesn't like it. I guess we should be thankful for small favors. But I enjoyed his latest piece in CNN, which shows that a poll which shows that about half Republicans sympathize with the Tea Party movement. The other half remain aloof. Even 5% express hostility. This is the movement that continues to rip apart the Republican Party. And sadly, if we had a functional Democratic Party, this is the one that would really send the Republican Party into the dustbin of history. We don't, so it hasn't been. But he breaks down four possibilities of what can happen. Possibility one, Romney is nominated. Romney is elected. It is also the outcome that looks worryingly out of reach. Romney can't raise above 30% support in his own party. It's hard to imagine where Romney will find the additional Republican votes he needs. I imagine most Republicans will flock to Romney once he's the nominee in a way that Frum doesn't seem to think they will, but who knows? Possibility two, Romney is nominated, Romney loses. And, of course, Frum also realizes that if that's the case, the radical right fringe of the Republican Party, in other words, 50% of them, I don't know if you call that a fringe, that's more like the heart and the electoral base of the party, will see the failure of McCain and Romney as a call to move further to the right, becoming even that much more bat crap crazy. Possibility three, a Tea Party Republican is nominated and loses. I guess presumably this would be Herman Cain or Rick Perry. Somebody sent me a video. Kyle sent me a video of Rick Perry. It was a compilation of a speech he gave up in New Hampshire. It's 8 minutes long, so we can't play the whole thing. And I really think the question should be, and maybe if we had a poll function on our site, we'd put this up. We'd put up the video and we'd ask, what medication is Mitt Romney on? And I would include in that any type of hallucinogenics.
You mean Rick Perry?
Rick Perry. I'm sorry, who did I say?
Mitt Romney.
Whatever. Rick Perry. I would include alcohol. I did have a guy at Occupy Wall Street, right actually outside of Occupy Wall Street, walk up to me and just go, oh my God, why do you have nose and eyes, man? And I said there was the same quality with Rick Perry. In his speech the other day, he gets incredibly giddy over a very small bottle of maple syrup that was given to him. And I like maple syrup. I have a six-year-old who would put maple syrup on everything. I've never seen her react to maple syrup this way. It was very strange. Very strange indeed. But in the event that a Cain or Perry gets elected, Frum feels that they will lose because they are far too extreme. And possibility four, a Tea Party Republican is nominated and wins, which I think he seems to fear more than anything else. The Tea Party stands for a series of propositions that don't meet the reality test, that deficits matter more than jobs, that cutting deficits and tightening credit will accelerate economic growth, that high taxes and overregulation are the most important reason that growth has not revived, and that America still offers the world's best opportunity for the poor to rise. This is a Republican. We can't even get our Democratic president to admit to these realities. And he goes on to say, if put in practice, the Tea Party platform is a formula for political and economic crisis. I would agree. And the Times came out with a piece this weekend. Republican presidential hopefuls have been saying alarming things about the federal courts. What am I going to put?
Surprise.
Where the F have these people been? They go on to say, when Chief Justice John Roberts began a new Supreme Court term by congratulating Antonin Scalia on his 25th anniversary as justice, it was a reminder that Justice Scalia is now 75, as is Anthony Kennedy, and that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 78. Since 80 is the average retirement age of justices over the past generation, whoever is elected president could shape the court for the next generation. Again, longtime listeners know this is my primary, if not only, reason why I would vote for President Obama based upon the field that we have today. Voters should be alarmed by the fringe ideas they've been hearing from Republican candidates so far, I'll say. The Roberts Court is closely divided, but also the most conservative since the 1950s. Four of the nine members are very conservative, three of them under the age of 64. If the president is a Republican and has the chance to fill Justice Ginsburg's seat, that could turn the court decidedly conservative for decades. If President Obama is reelected and has the chance to fill Justice Scalia's seat, that could turn the court into a more moderate one. Make no mistake, folks, the court has moved to the right in every single nomination and justice appointed since the 1950s. Every appointee, whether they were replacing a conservative seat or a so-called liberal seat, they have been to the right of the person that preceded them. And the court, of course, if you measure it on corporatist terms, is doing quite well in that regard. The last time the court's future depended so heavily on a single seat was the 1988 presidential election. The retired Justice John Paul Stevens wrote in his new memoir that when the first president, George Bush, was elected and got the opportunity to replace the very liberal Thurgood Marshall with the very conservative Clarence Thomas, the importance of the change in the court could not be overstated. And, of course, he uses about multiple 5-4 rulings to explain why. If Senator John Kerry had won the 2004 election, Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Samuel Alito, Jr., conservatives who had led the court to the right would not be on the court. And last year's devastating 5-4 ruling in the Citizens United case would likely not have happened. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, your best case argument for President Bush. When we come back, we'll be talking about Occupy Wall Street, the Washington Post's attempt to destroy Social Security, of course, with the help of the super committee, including Democrats on that super committee. We'll also talk about the Palestinians getting a seat on UNESCO, all that and more. We've got to take a break. I wanted to put in the Misfits today because it's Halloween. There you go. Should be an interesting night on Occupy Wall Street. My understanding is that there are a lot of people who, again, now, my understanding is that technically you're allowed, this is the one day of the year you're allowed to go out en masse with masks in New York City. I think the Occupy Wall Street people are going to be smart about it. My understanding is that they are there's a lot of people who are going to be painting on the Guy Fawkes mask onto their face, painting it on, which is not a mask, as you know, simply body art. The number is 646-257-3920. We're going to start to take your phone calls, maybe sooner than later. We're going to get on there and start to screen them. Meanwhile, over the weekend, I don't know if you've seen any of these photos, folks. Cops were drawing guns on protesters, rather large shotguns. Police in riot gear fired pepper balls and mace into a crowd of economic protesters in Denver on Saturday, arrested 20 of them after some people entered the grounds of the state capitol. How dare they? The state capitol's not for people. There were 2,000 demonstrators from Occupy Wall Street, marched peacefully through downtown Denver, as they've done for the past several Saturdays, the situation heated up when the protesters moved toward the Capitol. The Colorado State Patrol, which provides security for the State House, requested aid from Denver police when the marchers entered the Capitol grounds. God forbid. God forbid. Has there been, to your knowledge, Matt, has there been a single incidence of vandalism by any of the thousands upon thousands of people who have participated in Occupy Wall Street protest?
Other than the riot cops coming in and destroying the personal belongings of the
protesters? I'm talking about the protesters.
I know. I'm just saying. Yep. There's been nothing from the protesters that
I've not seen a single report of a rock through a window, of a statue being pushed over, of a street sign being torn down, of a car being smashed. I have not seen a single report in the over now 43 days in which these protests have been ongoing. Now, maybe there's one out there, and feel free to send me an email. I would be, frankly, I'm astonished. I would imagine there would be at least some, and maybe there are. It just hasn't been big enough to get into a news report. Maybe there's a news report of it out there. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen of a single shop window broken, nothing. So why in the world do we have cops anywhere in the country using rubber bullets or pepper bullets or tear gas? It boggles the mind. Meanwhile, we now have a second instance of someone loosely affiliated with NPR being fired or their show being canceled because of some measure of participation in one of these protests. You all are aware of the story of the woman, Lisa Simeon, who was a Baltimore-based freelance journalist, former host of the public radio program Soundprint, which by its name you can tell is a musical show. Current host of the World of Opera, which NPR now has essentially canceled, decided not to carry anymore, because in her off time, when she wasn't hosting an opera show, she participated in a protest. This is stunning. Can you imagine if a teabagger who was hosting an opera show that was carried by NPR stations was subjected to this? Can you imagine what would happen? NPR would be defunded again. Opera would be outlawed. Unbelievable. And the takeaway, which I guess is a NPR show, fired a freelance web producer who's been working part-time for 7 months. And who was trying to do a piece for the takeaway by having her boyfriend hold a sign that was written by Atlantic's Connor Friesdorf. Occupy Wall Street's greatest strength is neutering it. And wanted to see what would happen, how people would respond to it. She ended up holding the sign at one point, because her boyfriend was getting tired, but whatever. And she was summarily fired from her job. So just fascinating the way NPR, I've always hated NPR. Everybody knows that. Everybody listens to this program knows I have a problem with NPR. Meanwhile, some stats on... Tennessee also are arresting Occupy protesters. And apparently, despite no legal authority for the arrest, they did this over the weekend for the second straight night. I guess it was on Friday and Saturday nights. Tennessee state troopers arrested Republican Governor Bill, arrested Occupy Wall Street protesters, theoretically because of a nighttime curfew imposed by the Republican Governor Bill Haslam. And for the second time, a Nashville night judge dismissed the arrest warrants. Here's audio from that now. This is the night judge talking to a cop.
I am not criticizing the Highway Patrol, but you have no lawful basis to arrest or charge those people. For 3 weeks, they sat up there and protested under no admonition whatsoever that they're violating state policy with regard to camping out on Legislative Plaza or that they're committing a crime. When the state issued its memorandum today imposing a curfew and changing the rules right in the middle of a protest, they can do that, but they have to give them adequate opportunity to comply with those rules.
So there you have it. Tennessee judge admonishing the state trooper. Why do you keep bringing in people who haven't broken any laws?
Unfortunately, it's broken any laws yet.
Right. Pre-crime. There's some interesting stats on who is donating to Occupy Wall Street through a pay system called WePay. We may use that. It's recorded $81,000 sent to groups associated with Occupy Wall Street on October 10th. 17 days later, as of the 27th, that number grew to more than $325,000, according to WePay. They put out their stats. In terms of income brackets, the majority of donors make between $50,000 and $75,000 a year. Middle brackets, such as those making $35,000 to $50,000 or those making $75,000 to $100,000, donated more often. I guess there's a relative bell curve. Extremes in the income bracket, high wealth and poverty donated less often. So interesting numbers. I was down at Occupy Wall Street yesterday for a bunch of hours. And I forgot to tell Jeff, if he's listening, to call in to the program today, give us an update. Anybody from any Occupy Wall Street can call into the program. I'll start taking calls in just a moment. I ran into that guy, Lee Stranahan, and that guy, Brandon Darby. And I got to look into this. I know he was like one of the informants for a supposed massive ring of people who were supposedly going to blow up the Republican National Convention or something. I'm not sure. They were down there. I spent a while talking to them, sort of just curious as to what kind of questions they were asking. It's going to be interesting to see what they put on the video. But I will talk more about that in the better half of the show. Also, in Occupy Wall Street news, this is pretty stunning. You may have seen these photographs online. I guess they were posted in the New York Times blog. Every year, the law firm of Stephen J. Baum throws a Halloween party. They are a law firm in Buffalo. And it's essentially a foreclosure mill. They represent banks and mortgage servicers. Their client list includes J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, BofA, Wells Fargo. They're the biggest one in New York State. And apparently, a former worker there sent these photographs to a columnist at the New York Times of their last Halloween party. And you've got the people there essentially dressing up as poor people or as middle class people or as anybody who have lost their home. Mocking them for complaining about their foreclosure. There's one picture where two employees are dressed like homeless people. One's holding a bottle of liquor. And I'm sure no one's getting drunk at that party. The other has a sign around her neck that reads, "Third Party Squatter. I lost my home and I was never served," which apparently makes fun of the complaint by people whose homes are foreclosed upon. Second picture shows a coffin with a woman whose eyes have been cut out, who apparently is a lawyer who's been suing this foreclosure mill for bad practices. A third photograph shows a corner of the office, of a Baum's office, decorated to look like a row of foreclosed homes with a sign that reads, "Baum Estates." Full of foreclosed homes. This firm is under investigation by Eric Schneiderman, New York Attorney General. It recently agreed to pay a $2 million fine to resolve an investigation by the Department of Justice whether the firm had filed misleading pleadings, affidavits, and mortgage assignments in the state and federal courts in New York. In other words, it is this psychopathic and greed-laden character of the people who are foreclosing on people, who see people who are down on their luck as potential marks, as potential sources of revenue, so much so that it's simply a cost of doing business if you get caught and have to pay $2 million. Because you are lying on affidavits. Because you have robo-signers. Or you have no chain of title. Or you go in and refuse to tell people who are about to be foreclosed upon that you might be a good candidate for loan modification. Because there's no fees in it for you. Or not as much fees if these people actually stay in their home with a loan modification as opposed to foreclosing on them. These are just one element. I doubt the people working there are part of the plutocracy. They're just the people who get thrown the bones from the plutocrats to do their bidding. And I'm glad they're horribly, horribly embarrassed now, if that's possible. These are functionally the same people who sat up on the balconies on Wall Street watching the protesters going by sipping champagne. Just reprehensible. Meanwhile, speaking of sipping champagne, and hopefully we'll speak to him briefly about this shortly, New York Daily News reports that the NYPD seems to have crossed a line in recent days as the park has taken on a darker tone, with unsteady and unstable types suddenly seeming to emerge from the woodwork. This is down at Zuccotti Park. Two different drunks I spoke with last week told me they'd be encouraged to, quote, take it to Zuccotti by officers who'd found them drinking in other parks, and members of the community affairs working group related similar stories they've heard while talking with intoxicated or aggressive new arrivals. Quote, he's got the right to express himself. You've got a right to express yourself. I heard three cops repeat in recent days using nearly identical language when asked to intervene with troublemakers inside the park, including a clearly disturbed man screaming and singing wildly at 3 a.m. for the second straight night. So in other words, part of their ongoing plan to make it difficult for people to stay in the park is to take people who may have, who are clearly intoxicated, who may have psychological issues, and steer them toward Zuccotti. There needs to be an internal investigation by the police department to find out if these allegations are true. Because if so, it's unbelievable. And next thing we'll hear are the right-wingers who are going to be reporting on how many drunks there are in Zuccotti Park and how the members of Zuccotti Park cannot police themselves but won't let police in to do any policing. That's the next story we're going to hear. Stunning. And it really doesn't look well for the cops who apparently were up in the Bronx the other day cheering on 16 police officers who were arraigned at state Supreme Court for ticket fixing. Now, to a certain extent, I can appreciate that the cops are pissed about this because there's no doubt in my mind that when a cop fixes a ticket, half the time they're doing so because their boss has told them. At least. But apparently, there were also more serious crimes related to both ticket fixing and drugs, grand larceny, and unrelated corruption. Four officers were charged with helping a man get away with assault. I'm not sure, like, why all of these indictments were brought together. Perhaps they were all involved in the same investigation. There are 1,600 criminal counts. I guess you do not cross that blue line, right? Unbelievable. All right, folks. We've got more stories. Washington Post attacks on Social Security. And Palestine being admitted to UNESCO. We will get to those in the post show, the better half of the show. And I will also discuss my trip down to Occupy Wall Street. Hopefully we'll get some phone calls from Occupy Wall Streeters around the country. Remember, if you wanted to hear these stories and more, you could be a Majority Report member. You could join tomorrow or today, and when we give you your information, you can go back and listen to all of these programs. But even if you can't handle the truth in 90-minute doses, you only like a 40-minute dose of truth. Folks, that 40 minutes is only made available to you because of the largesse of our members. Unlike Andrew Breitbart, who apparently didn't want to publicize it, I don't have investors coming and giving me $10 million. Not announcing that investment at all. I just happened to stumble across it. $10 million for a website that has three Google ads on the front page. We just don't have those type of people on the left. And if we do, I don't know if I would take their money anyways. Which is why I need small investments from you, the potential members. And, of course, you can always go to justcoffee.coop, buy some coffee, use our Amazon link, donate your account. Trying to do a web design. Will you help us out? All right, see you in the better half of the show.